This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're here with Laugh Out Proud
with Z and G on Joy 94.9. Listening to Laugh Out Proud with Z and G on Joy 94.9, and we're joined by US comedian Shane Moss. How are you today, Shane?
I'm wonderful.
And is it your first time in the country?
I think it's my fifth time.
Fifth time in the country.
Like
wow. Okay. So
I think I've been coming since around 2008 or 2009.
Oh wow. Okay. So this is your first rodeo here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So what in the 2008. So
something how's around? Yeah,
you've been
right
for like nearly
there.
10 years.
Yeah.
So have
you
noticed Australia change or Melbourne change at all in any way?
I actually haven't been here for like 4 or 5 years, and I haven't been out since I've been here on this trip.
Oh, really?
Because I just got in yesterday, had a bunch of radio and podcasts and stuff to do, and I haven't had a chance to sleep much yet. My hotel has construction going on outside my room. They're like, we upgraded you to a junior suite or something like that, so to make
that
it sound nice. Like
to make it sound better than it is. Yeah.
when really they put me in the room right next to all the construction.
Oh wow! So you're waking up to drills and jackhammers all the time. Wow,
that's literally jackhammers and drills is all.
It could make for some new material, right? I don't know.
Once I go completely insane,
that's right. That's where I find the best material comes from. You know, when you have that sleep deprivation,
sure.
Right? Like you get those craziest ideas.
Yeah.
So, are you? Are you Boston? Did you grow up in Boston?
No, Wisconsin.
That's right. You started in comedy in Boston.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So what was it like? How old were you when you started?
I was 24.
24, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So you just sort of launched into the open mics like that?
Yeah. I wanted to be a comedian since I was pretty young.
Right.
And my plan was to go as soon as I got out of high school when I was 18 years old. I wanted to go and start doing comedy. And
right.
then I ended up trying to save up money and ended up working in factories for like 5 years.
Right on.
And,
right on. You're on the grind.
And until eventually I realized that I couldn't possibly take another day of it.
Right.
And
just the monotonous factory work. Fair enough. Yeah, you wanted to live the comic life.
Yeah.
So how did you, who would you look up to then?
When I was younger, Stephen Wright and Emo Phillips.
Okay,
and then later on in my life, I think when I got into comedy, who were some of my favorites? Doug Stanhope.
Yep.
I think at the time, Jim Gaffigan was one.
Yeah.
And Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, right on. Nice.
And Todd Barry, another one.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So what, you started when you were 18, what year?
No, I wanted to start when I was 18.
To start,
but I started when I was about 24 years old.
So
about 2004.
Okay, right on.
2004,
okay.
Yeah.
So in the open mics, what sort of, did you try out, who were you trying out your material on before?
My first open mic that I did, and I did this weekly open mic,
at like a one night place.
Yeah, it was this rundown. It's since been condemned, but it was in Dorchester, Massachusetts. It's in one of the most dangerous kind of rundown areas in the state. And this place had they had two bathrooms and only one was ever working. And
nice. What about the disabled bathroom?
No, nothing like that. There was always the heat and the air conditioning never worked, so it was always either too hot or too cold.
Yeah, okay.
There was I once got mugged outside of it at gunpoint.
How did that set go that night, though?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
that's a plus.
So worth it, yeah.
At least getting mugged that can make for some sort of material, right?
Sure.
Did you turn into material?
I did for a little while. I told the story on stage. I don't even remember how it went now.
No.
But I blocked it out of my I do remember that my friend right. that was with me at the time, like he got kind of mugged first,
right?
And it was his birthday, and he was drunk, and he was like depressed about his birthday because he was like turning 30 or something
that. Yeah, the big 30.
So they came. I thought it was like a joke because of his reaction.
Yeah, the wallet inspector
came up and like. Held a gun to him, and they're like, give me your wallet or whatever. And my friend is like, I only got $20, and screw you, you're not getting it. Like,
wow,
oh, thanks.
Wow,
man.
That's how you deal with a mugging. That's how you deal with a mugging.
Yeah, and then it was rather terrifying.
Yeah. You didn't get pistol whipped or anything, did you?
No.
Okay, good.
In fact, I didn't remember doing this until we saw the footage afterwards.
Oh, there was CCTV footage?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
I punched one of the people. Yeah,
you landed
the punch, which I don't remember throwing until I saw the... everything happened pretty quickly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And,
wow.
As they were leaving, like we ran in and got the bouncer, and as they were leaving, one of them went for my wallet, which I would have just gave them my wallet, they just like ripped, they just grabbed and like ripped, so like they like ripped a leg of my pants.
Oh, wow. That's a forceful pull. Wow. Yeah. Jeez. That's amazing.
And so that's all that happened.
So you walked
was
back
I
into the club with,
pants,
yeah, with almost no pants on.
Yeah.
What the hell happened there? Yeah, the security guard.
But it was, I remember the open mic that they had there. It was a true open mic. So if you signed up, you got to go on.
What time did the sign up start?
It started around 6 p.m.,
oh, wow.
and then the show went until 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And anyone that stayed around until midnight or something like that, I think got a free piece of pizza for performing.
That's not bad. That's not
bad. And so there's all these homeless people that would come in and perform because they would get...
That's a good incentive, right?
Yeah, because they get a free... So
that must have been some interesting sets.
It really was.
From homeless people and
so
stuff like that.
So that's where I started.
Okay.
I was performing and watching homeless people.
Did you... So were there more... one night is going around, like as you sort of progressed in your comedy career, like you sort of expanded.
I was able to, I started doing kind of showcases right away, and then
this is in Boston.
And then moved my way up to hosting and then featuring. It's the model in the U.S. is you start doing guest spots and then you go to hosting,
right?
And then and then you do like a feature
like
set, like 20 to 30 minutes, and then you headline after that.
Right.
And I sucked so bad at hosting that they bumped me up to middling right away because they still liked my jokes, but I was just too awkward to be a host.
Hosting like emceeing.
I was very dry and very like, I wasn't someone that would like do crowd work or anything
that.
And I had a lot of stage fright back then. I just kind of got by on my joke writing
skills.
How
did you push through that? How did you push through the stage fright? Just keep doing it, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I kind of still to this day I don't have stage fright, but I just rely pretty heavily on my joke writing,
right?
And I'm not I don't have big like crazy characters or big act outs or anything. I'm not the most animated person in the world. Actually, now I'm a little more conversational. So now it's just like I'm kind of talking. But when I just started, it was a little more like Stephen Wright or like Emo Phillips kind of style.
So what was that? Just natural evolution of sort of
I think a lot of it was just stage fright where I was just kind of like a little uncomfortable and
I'm kind of
like a dry monotone person anyway, so that's just kind of how it expressed itself.
And then eventually you just become comfortable with that space.
I cut breaks really early on and had I won some award that at a festival that got me kind of my first late night sets.
What's it like performing on late night with Conan?
Did Conan 5 times and Jimmy Kimmel.
Take us through that whole process. What is that sort of experience like, you know, sitting back in the green room? Does Conan come in and say hello?
Usually. The first time was the craziest because I had been doing comedy for less than 3 years.
Wow.
And I had just won this big festival, this U.S. Comedy Arts Festival.
Right.
And I had a big fancy agent and manager that signed me. And I was on a bus going from Boston to New York, and it was kind of just about to get off in New York, and my new agent called me and told me that the Conan people wanted to talk to me. So I called the Conan people, and this was back in 2007.
Right.
And they were like, hey, do you have a we saw you at this festival. Do you have a set that you could send us and or written up or anything? Right. I'm like, I don't have my computer with me.
I can send it to you in
a few days. And they're like, well, can you just like tell us? Can you just do your set over the phone?
Wow.
And so I was on the streets of Manhattan
performing
my set over the phone to two people. And they were like, all right, we like it. You ought to be on the show next Monday?
Awesome. Was there a response as you were sort of doing the set? Were they like laughing at the point that you expect them to laugh?
Yeah, kind of. It was weird. It was strange. I was kind of like, I kind of had to be like, okay, and at this point the audience gets really uncomfortable, and then I do this and it flips it. I kind of had to give them notes about how the audience typically responds.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was my very first TV set, and then
what's that feeling when you're sort of behind the curtain as they're announcing you're going to come out? Like, what's that?
The first time I was just like on such a hot streak that I was just so confident at the time.
Right on, yeah.
And so I was just like, I got this.
Let's do it.
Yeah. It was actually funny because the second time that I did it, I was far more nervous.
Really?
They gave me a lot of notes the night before.
Oh, wow.
And just they kind of like had me change a bunch of things in my set the night before.
Like the words?
And they had...
Was it due to censorship or...?
No. Well, what happened was I sent them like a DVD of my act and they got it and they were like... there's something wrong with the DVD and we only got to see half of it.
Oh.
But we really liked that half. So just bring a set and come to New York and you'll be on next Tuesday or whatever. And so I went and I gave them a few other minutes of material to pick from.
Right.
They ended up like cutting one of the jokes that they did like and adding in other things. And then because I'd never done some transitions before, I ended up having to like write a joke that I only told once ever. And it was okay. It was the worst TV joke, I guess. Yeah. It was probably the worst late night set that I've ever had was the second time that I was on because I kind of got a little rattled by all of that.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
But they had me back.
And how does Kimmel compare then?
That was fun. It was different because it's a little more like a club setting that they have there.
But, okay. Do they film on the same lot?
But it's in a different room than the regular, and it's even like a different audience and everything. It's really strange the way that
like
they do it.
Different demographic sort of thing, yeah.
They like bring in a whole different audience like off of the street to just sit and watch for this like 5 minute thing.
Oh, for your set.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's really strange.
Oh, that's weird. So you were doing your start in Boston, but then Boston's pretty close to New York, isn't it?
Yeah, so I went to New York a fair amount, but then I went to Austin after like 6 years. I went to Austin, Texas. I've pretty much only moved because of girls. I've never made like career moves. The first one going to Boston, that was for starting stand-up.
Right.
After that, I moved to Austin in the hopes of having a fresh start with my girlfriend and to repair a relationship. That didn't work out.
Mm.
So ended up breaking that off, met a comic that I hooked up with and moved to L.A. And then I was there for 4 or 5 years. Even after we broke up, I stayed around for a couple years.
Right on, okay.
And then I've recently moved for a girl to Portland, Oregon.
Oh, Portland,
so,
nice.
So, yeah.
Portland, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's Austin's expression as well.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, Austin and Portland kind of fancy themselves the two weirdest places in the country.
Yeah, Austin has that same sort of vibe.
Yeah, it's awesome. Austin's my favorite place in the U.S. probably.
It doesn't have the same legalization, does it, Austin, as Oregon does?
Well, yeah, Oregon has... No. Texas, I think, is going to be a while before they legalize
typical
weed.
Texas, right?
But, yeah, it's... Texas isn't as cartoonishly southern as you might think in your mind.
Yep.
Whereas like Alabama or like Missouri, definitely there's parts that are like very much like, hey, Bill, bam, 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 bam. Like exactly like you would think.
Okay, yeah.
I actually went to, do you guys know Duck Dynasty?
Yeah. That's on A&E. Yeah.
I was once drunk in Vegas with my brother, and we went to see Duck Dynasty the musical.
Wow.
Yeah,
No.
It was a bunch of actors playing the people from the show.
What a crazy concept.
It was one of the biggest train wrecks I've ever seen in my life. I loved every second of it. It was so great.
They have
great.
The duck callers and everything. And the,
it was like,
they make music.
I'm gonna make the best duck call the world's ever seen. It was ridiculous.
Do they make like songs from the duck callers?
No.
Like
it was, but they made songs about duck calls.
Okay, all right. So I think that's where they effed up, because they made songs like a kazoo, right? That makes the most sense, right?
It was one of the more ridiculous things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, while we work out how to make a Duck Dynasty musical, we'll be listening to this. You're listening to Laugh Out Proud with Z and G on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Laugh Out Proud with Z and G on Joy 94.9. And Shane Moss still is sticking around with us. Thank you so much for sticking around,
Absolutely.
Shane.
Absolutely.
And you're doing some crazy dance moves during that song that we just heard. I don't know what those crazy dance moves were, Shane.
Just some stuff that I've been working on.
Yeah, no, I saw them. What do you call those dance moves?
They're called the shaking off the insecurities.
Oh, don't we all know that? Yeah. Don't we all know that, huh? But thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate
Absolutely.
It. But before the break, we're talking about Duck Dynasty the musical. Wow. What a musical train wreck you said that would have been.
It was quite a disaster.
Can you imagine that traveling anywhere else except Vegas?
I mean, I think that it could have been, like Branson, Missouri, I think it would actually do well.
Right.
But if I had enough money, I would like buy it and then have it be like a producer's kind of like ironically.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like bring it somewhere like hip, like Portland
or Austin.
Have people like laugh at
you
it.
You should totally call them.
It is like
buy it off them.
Yeah,
it's like a group like that would be worth $100K or something like that.
I bet they're selling it for pretty cheap.
Yeah, $10.
It was. I was one of the few people on Earth that got to see it because it only lasted for about 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And it was like one of the biggest flops in
really?
Vegas history. And,
wow.
That's
amazing. Wow.
It was. It was quite an incredible disaster.
In performing stand up, have you sort of performed in like all the big ones like the Cellar in New York?
I haven't done the Cellar because I didn't get to New York that often when I was in Boston actually. And I don't like working that hard. And so any room where they're like, you gotta grind it out and you gotta know this person and you gotta get in, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to. I don't care.
Gotham?
I performed there. Nice club.
What about in LA, like the Comedy Store and stuff like that?
Yeah, I performed at all those places in LA. I'm like a road dog. I perform on the road all of the time. So when I'm in LA, unless someone asks me to do a show, I am usually just kind of on vacation when I'm at home. Because I'm at home so little.
Right.
I'm traveling probably at least 3 weeks out of the month. So when I am home, I'm usually just like doing my podcast and getting some writing done, working on other projects. I'm making a documentary at the moment.
Oh, really?
And,
oh, wow. Yeah, what's a documentary about?
It's about psychedelic drugs.
Right on.
Yeah.
Wow. So is it in relation to your current show? Right. So what do you sort of delve into in the psychedelic drug world?
So basically,
focusing on DMT or
some DMT stuff, yeah. Basically, I'm kind of, it's just a little broad overview of what's going on in the psychedelic world these days. And so what happened was I had doing this tour, this about psychedelics, a good trip. I did a 111 city tour, and I did all of these podcasts promoting it. And a producer heard me on Mark Maron's WTF, and
I listened to that one. That was a great episode.
Thanks. Yeah, they thought my story was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
and wanted to document what what I had right, going okay. on, and I was like, sure, okay. And, okay. and it's just been weird because I've been doing psychedelics for 21 years, but I've never been like doing them. I've never been doing them like correctly. I've just kind of been experimenting on my right, brain. Yeah. I've never been like following
just the buy the ticket, take the ride.
Yeah, yeah. And so once I started doing this tour, I kind of got indoctrinated into this culture of all these interesting research groups right. And it's fascinating because I've just been like doing these things as, I mean, a way to explore the mind and as a creative aid, but to meet all these organizations doing stuff to alleviate like PTSD and right. depression and all these serious things. It really, I didn't realize how serious, the potential of psychedelic research was until I kind of started. I was already doing this show before I started learning all of this stuff.
So I
kind of just got thrown into this world of these weird networks of people and underground stuff going on. And so we just decided to document it. And
so you're sort of pioneering the modern day psychedelic research.
Trying to.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
So what are you, what sort of things are we finding out here? So what are we, exploring?
I did ketamine in a clinical setting.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, that was like IV?
Intramuscular injection. And that was interesting. That was, it was meant to be for depression, but I wasn't depressed at the time. Depression is like a very real problem for me. I've been going through a bit of it recently. And, you know, comes and goes in waves. Yeah. But when I get it, it lasts for like 3 weeks to 6 weeks.
Wow.
Sometimes even more than that. And so it is, it really hinders my life.
Yeah.
Mushrooms are something that seem to help with it. Mm-hmm. If I do mushrooms at the start of it. And I haven't done them in a while, now because I did so many psychedelics for the documentary that I need a break.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
to integrate for a while.
What was taking ketamine in a, was it in a, like a sort of a hospital setting?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a therapist there and.
Cause I mean, taking psychedelics at home as opposed to in a hospital environment would completely change.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I were to do street ketamine, I'd have to find a hopefully reputable dealer like you're probably snorting it and like having to figure out how much to take and everything else. I mean, that's why.
So I put you at ease doing it in a sort of a hospital setting.
Oh, very much so. Okay. I mean, in an ideal world, I wish that all psychedelic use was used in a professional setting like that. At least until people, like, I'm not that big of an advocate for recreational psychedelic use, even though I do it myself all the time. But I mean, I consider myself
not for everybody sort of thing. Like, you got to have your mind on right.
I mean, I've always been someone that
likes
exploring the limits of things, and I've always been an adrenaline junkie, and so for me, it kind of has worked out just fine, but I think that a lot of people, it would freak out a lot of people, and I kind of put it like this, I kind of consider myself astronaut of the inner world, you know,
psychonaut.
And so I'm not going to peer pressure anyone else to just because I'm pro NASA doesn't mean I'm like, hey, get in the spaceship. Everyone should be an astronaut.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Once you see the Earth from up there, it's going to change the way you see everything.
I kind of think that though. That would be an amazing thing to see Earth right from orbit.
Yeah, but if someone was like, but don't those things explode once in a while? I'd be like, yeah, there are some risks involved.
Yeah, I guess you don't think about that when you're taking an airplane, right?
Exactly.
So what were you going through sort of the psychedelics sort of list one by one in this research?
I was trying to.
Okay.
But, I mean, LSD isn't my cup of tea.
Really?
Okay. That rhymed. That was fun.
Beautiful.
So, and then different things for different times. Like MDMA, I never liked until recently, because I'd done it in like party settings, and I didn't like it that much. It felt good, but I wasn't like learning anything from it until I started doing it with my girlfriend, and then it turns out it's like a really nice relationship
and
really working through some problems and whatnot.
Break down those barriers.
Mescaline, I haven't really had much experience with. I've done San Pedro, but that's like a really That was a little too functional for me.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know if I had enough or what, but I've done it a couple times.
Did you keep
now
it down? Did you keep that cactus juice down?
Barely. It's one of the more disgusting things that I've ever had in my life. Yeah, but I definitely want to try peyote at one point. It's one of the things that makes me a little bit nervous.
Can you not do like the same, like with the ayahuasca? You can go like, you know, South American stuff like that. Can you not do that with Native Americans?
There are legal peyote churches in the U.S. I haven't looked into it yet, but
include that in the documentary, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, did you explore like those designer psychedelics, like that are the offshoots from mescaline, like 2CI and like all those?
Yeah, I've done 2CB. It was okay.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff I haven't had enough time to research and know if I'm getting like the purest.
That's fair,
makes me like a little bit nervous.
Iffy, fair enough.
I kind of honestly, I love mushrooms and DMT, and now I've been kind of turned on to ayahuasca as well.
Right.
And I don't know what other ones I need that much. I'm into exploring and trying out other things, but I'm also starting to worry a little bit about my sanity as I've been.
Really?
I mean, I've been like, you know, I've been kind of exploring pretty hard for the last year or so, and it's starting to like wear on me a little bit.
The line of reality and not sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've had enough DMT experiences now where I feel like I've spent thousands of lifetimes in some other dimension that I don't fully understand. It's really hard to make sense when you're DMT, you're just like shooting through tunnels of computation at a zillion miles an hour, and it's kind of hard to tell heads from tails. It feels like an infinite amount of time. It makes this life seem like a tiny fraction of the amount of time that I've spent existing.
When you say infinite amount of time, you were talking with Rogan on his podcast, and you were saying that like DMT gives you like this feel like you're gonna die.
Yeah.
And I noticed Rogan sort of cut you off there, and he was like, "No, it doesn't give me that sort of experience." But like, I understand what you're saying in that like it makes like it's the you know dissolving of the ego sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, some researchers think that DMT, dimethyltryptamine, which is already in your brain, gets released in high volumes
when you die,
your brain right before you die.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I don't
theory.
It's not. It's certainly not proven by any means. It's pretty wild speculation. Mm. I happen to believe in it because this is embarrassing to even talk about. I had a really bad injury years ago, and I had pain pills, and I hadn't drank in like 2 or 3 years, and I was really depressed, and I was drinking and doing too many, and I was feeling great, but I didn't realize how many pills that I had.
Well, I purchased that or something like that.
Yeah, and I OD'd, and I had a full-on DMT trip from that, and I was able to recognize what it was. I was like,
"That's amazing."
I was like, "Wait, did I smoke DMT?"
Yeah,
and I'm like, "No, I'm dying right now," and I was able to pop myself out of it.
That's incredible.
So from that experience, I do believe that it is accessing some sort of afterlife.
How did you pop yourself out of having an OD?
I just started.
Was it like that scene in Trainspotting where he ODs on the heroin?
Yeah, I like I woke up just like and like punching the air, and I got my blood circulating and like really up and moving again.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
I'm kind of lucky to be here.
The psychedelic to a good trip.
Yeah.
You were talking about it's not just straight stand up. It's
I mean, I would say it's a third stand-up and a third, like, funny stories about experiences, and then it's a third kind of informational, like, TED Talk-y in
a way.
And
so do you take people through sort of the psychedelic world itself?
Yeah, I try to. I've tried to make a show that anyone can understand.
Yeah,
I mean,
get rid of the misinformation.
People at least need to be open-minded. And if someone comes and they have no idea that I'm going to be talking about psychedelics and think that they're just going to get a regular comedy show, those are the people that make me nervous, because I'm like, they're probably going
a little bit edgy for them.
But if someone is at least, no experience is required, but if someone is at least curious, I think that I've done a pretty nice job of articulating the experiences for everybody. At least that's the feedback that I've gotten from it, and it's been... I've gotten bigger, like, better reviews than anything that I've ever done in my 13-year career, and
that's
so
amazing.
Yeah.
So, so how many cities now have you done with this tour?
I've done. Oh, well, the tour that I did was 111 cities in the U.S., and I did more other cities before the tour, so I think I've done pretty close to 120 cities now.
That's amazing.
I know. It's so many. Even hearing that come out of my mouth, I'm like, did I really do that?
So throughout those 120 cities, has the show changed at all? Have you changed any pieces? So
Yeah. So it's constantly evolving. I have about 3 hours of material here I'm doing an hour. Typically, I'm doing more like an hour and a half, but here they have me slotted for an hour during the show, so I'm kind of picking and choosing what aspects of it.
Where are you playing in Melbourne?
At the Comics Lounge.
Okay, cool. So you're playing from today and right through till
Saturday.
Okay, at the Comics Lounge. Then
go to Sydney, and then next Saturday I'm in Sydney.
Right on. And what are those dates?
It's next Saturday. I don't know the date off the top of my head. What's the date today? Is it the 26th, I think?
26th, yeah. 28th, there we go, officially.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Shane.
Oh, thank
really
you.
Really appreciate it. Awesome. And definitely go down and see that show. Fantastic. I really want to see that show. It sounds like a fantastic show.
Awesome.
But thank you so much, Shane, for coming down. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Laugh Out Proud with Z and G on Joy 94.9.
For listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.